is PS You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, shoplifting queens.
Yeah,
we're back and ready to go.
Yeah, will this movie inspire more boosters? I mean, maybe. Like, honestly, it's not that deep, guys. Like, stick it to the man.
I mean, I do think it's interesting that, I mean, not, I don't know. It's a fun coincidence that this movie came out like a month after the New York Times, or was it New York or whatever, the like Gia Tolentino micro-looting interview. Did you see all of that?
Yeah. Micro-looting, so funny.
Of like, is it okay to like steal from Whole Foods and Target?
Yeah.
And
don't do Target, guys. This is the hot tip, is Target has some of the most elite like facial recognition cameras out there, and they will wait until they've cataloged you crossing into the federal like offense shoplifting amount, like $50,000 or whatever, and then they strike.
$50,000? So, that's the...
I don't remember. Like, whatever changes it from a state to a federal crime. But it's like, they will like wait years if needed, and then charge you, and then you're going to prison. Okay, you're going to prison, babes. So like, avoid Target shoplifting.
Wait, it's only $5,000.
Okay, only $5,000. That's the risk. That's the gamble. See, it's really easy to get that. So just be careful of Target, because they're nasty. Okay. I just learned this. I just knew this. It's not anything I do personally, right?
Right.
It's
just, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's just be wary. Just be wary. But you know what? I was an OG micro looter, I think, because when I worked in New York, you know, with you, mm-hmm. shout out, I would like go to Whole Foods for my lunch break or whatever. But I would just steal a cookie. I would just take a cookie. You know, because they had their like bakery. They had their like, I don't know, they probably changed it now, but they had like their bakery, like just all their cookies and treats out on shelves for you to bag and take to the cashier. And I would just sneak a cookie and eat it while I walked around the store. And that was my budget meal for the day. So
that's all you would eat for lunch is one cookie while you're eating.
Oh, but it would fill my soul. It would feed my spirit. You know, it would give me something beyond nutrition. That's what I mean.
Interesting. Okay. So were you buying lunch at Whole Foods, or you were just wandering around Whole Foods getting
I don't remember. Cookie? Like, I think it would be sometimes I would get, you know, they're like hot food, whatever, takeout. Right.
Yeah, it's like the hot
And I would
bar.
Just take a freebie cookie as like a little treat to myself. Or it would just be like, I don't know, because I couldn't afford to grocery shop there, but I would find my way to Whole Foods and I'd take a cookie whenever I could.
Yeah, like I know exactly the Whole Foods you're talking about. And I think I was only ever in there like a couple of times because, and that was, but I feel like I was not really like brought up in a looting environment as a super religious Christian person. So the concept did not cross my desk for quite some time.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I have been able to execute that. I think I'm a little too nervous. Mm. What I will say is that when I moved to New York, I was making so little money.
Yes.
And it was like, what does one do when you're living in this city where everything is super expensive to fill your time if you can't spend any money? So I would go to the movies and I would buy I would get there early, like on a Saturday for like the first matinee, which I think at that point the tickets were only $5 if you showed up for the first screening at AMC.
Yeah.
And this was pre-movie pass as well.
Yeah.
And so I would buy the $5 ticket, and then after that movie was done, I would like go in to see a second movie.
Double so feature.
So it would be like, oh, okay, for $5, I got to spend, you know, like 4 hours or whatever in a movie theater, which was great. Then, obviously, Movie Pass came out, and it was only, $10 a month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then that's when I fully, like, locked into that, and I haven't really had to...
And what was Movie Pass, if not micro... micro looting. I don't know.
I was macro looting.
Yeah,
with movie pets. I don't know who was losing all that money, but I was going to see like dozens of movies every month for $10, and not only was I like getting all of these tickets for free, basically, but you could also initially get points. And so I would get the free rewards from AMC and Regal, which would basically like
racking up those
points. Yeah, you would earn more than $10 by doing that. Like, I still have Regal, like, Sapphire Gold or whatever. Like, I have some high tier in Regal that's, like, from MoviePass that's been grandfathered over, even though I don't go see Regal movies anymore. It's so fun whenever I think about MoviePass.
Ugh. I know. The golden era. I remember my record was before MoviePass. I did a triple feature with friends. Like, we spent a whole Saturday at Times Square, but the one closest to Times Square, AMC.
The one that's on 34th Street, or the one?
Yeah. And we watched, it was just like the worst triple feature because it was Boyhood and Whiplash.
Oh.
And then what else came out
year? What were the other Oscar movies that year?
It was like Birdman. Yeah, probably something like that. But we couldn't tell where these movies were, right? Because they didn't like have they didn't have the theater name. So we would be like running around. There's all those escalators we were having to like dip up and down. And at one point I tried to like play it off and be like to the ticket taker, like, oh, I lost my ticket. Like, what theater is Boyhood in at this time? Can you tell me? And she's like, can you show me your receipt? And I was like, oh, okay, bye. Like, you know, just like thinking I was so slick.
I actually like,
I remember. Yeah.
No, that is crazy. Do you see the TikToks where there's this girl on TikTok who's like, join me today as I watch 5 movies. And she'll she'll spend like a whole day watching movies at different theaters or whatever.
That's cute.
I'm like, that is so, like, as someone who occasionally will watch 5 movies in a day during a film festival, it's like, that is a lot. It is.
It starts to lose its fun. Right.
It's sort of a little soul-sucking, especially if you get a couple of bad ones in there or something that's particularly long. Yeah. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
This is not fun.
But anyways.
A movie that is fun to watch, even if it is a little kooky, is I Love Boosters. This is this is the new release from Boots Riley, who directed Sorry to Bother You, which I feel like we talked about at some point.
I liked it. You did not like it.
Yes.
Sorry, maybe you're wiser now. Maybe you're now more anti-capitalism.
I think the thing with Sorry to Bother You is that I was very unaware of like what that movie's vibe was gonna be going into it, and then it's like, oh, people are turning into horses and it was just crazy. This I think is a little bit more grounded, even though it is a wild movie. Like, people aren't there's time travel, there's whatever but for whatever reason it felt a little bit more like cohesive, I thought, than Sorry to Bother You, but starring a real murderer's row of actors in Kiki Palmer, Naomi Aki, Taylor Page, Isaac Gonzalez, Don Cheadle in a fat suit, Demi Moore, Will Poulter. Yeah. Yes.
And
so many.
Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah. A great lineup. And the basic premise is that like Kiki Palmer is running this ring of boosters. And is booster a term that's like in the like cultural zeitgeist? I didn't know about it in terms of like shoplifting before I watched this movie.
I think it is a real term.
Okay.
I too was unaware. So it's probably for the cool kids. It's probably for Black culture, like, let's be real,
because I only know boosters as like sports boosters, you know what I mean, like the sort of like people who give money to like college sports teams.
Oh, yeah. Okay, like, you're thinking Friday Night Lights.
Well, yes. Like, Booster. I think there's a plot line in, what's the, in The Blind Side about how her family are, like, boosters for Texas A&M or whatever college that is.
Right.
But they are, they're stealing clothes from shops and then selling it on the sly to make money.
Right.
Which, fun. Good business model.
Got it. We got it.
We love it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very, he's a maximalist, surrealist sort of filmmaker, very colorful, very bright, very like, yes, it's our world, but it's a little bit kooky, a little bit zany. There's a entire bit about a skyscraper being built at a tilt.
Yes.
And so all of, you know, there's multiple scenes of people struggling to stand on this sharp incline that the house exists on. And yeah, it's just like a very specific, brightly colored type of style that the director brings. And I went and saw this with Rob, who had not seen Sorry to Bother You. And he'd just seen the trailer of like, oh, Keke Palmer, like shoplifting, cool. And I wonder how much you need to prepare for this in order to enjoy this film, because he and I had very different watching experiences.
Well, I saw a TikTok of like a girl who was leaving the theater with her family, and they were all, and they're like, everybody, like, give us your reviews of the movie. And it was like, they're all like, bad, terrible, hated it. And this was, it was a Black family, and presumably they were like, oh, Keke Palmer, like a bunch of people that we like, let's go see this fun movie. And it was like, what are we watching here? Because also he's very much like his in the style, he's like very maximalist, zany, fun, bright colors. Like the score is really poppy and energetic. But then he also has very little subtlety when it comes to the message as well. Yeah. Like it's very anti-capitalist, very, there's not a lot of like nuance to it. It's like satire that's sort of like hitting you over the head. Which is fun, but also it is sort of a weird dichotomy of like the movie is so zany and so many weird things are happening. But then there's also sort of like monologue kind of moments where they're saying like, and where they're talking about like political thing. Like at one point they're talking about like dialectical materialism, and they sort of like go on a tangent about what that is and how that works. Yeah. So I can see how it's off-putting to people if you're like, oh, I thought it was going to be fun, and then it ended up being weird, and then also it was all of this politics that I didn't necessarily know that I was signing up for. Although it has a 93% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, which I was shocked by. I thought I was going to check this out, and it was going to be like 36% or something.
Yeah, because it's, that's what surprised me too, is like it's doing pretty well. And I feel like, you know, he's a very independent filmmaker. Like, you know, this is an original idea. It's not backed by a huge studio, but it's like he has this vision, he does it, blah, blah, blah. But like Sorry to Bother You didn't make an impact beyond like actual like movie critics, you know, and like it wasn't like a social must-see. But it seems like people are more aware of this one, maybe just because of the star power around it. But I was expecting that sort of dramatic audience versus critics score split. But yeah, it's doing pretty well. It's certified fresh, as they say.
I mean, I do think that Keke Palmer goes a long way in any film. She's so charismatic and so fun to watch and so funny that I think he utilizes her really well. And she does a really good job of like bringing the audience in and feeling like they are on her side and connecting with her, even as it's maneuvering this sort of strange world. Like, no shade to Lakeith Stanfield and Tessa Thompson, who I think are both great actors, but they are not actors, I think, who, like, are approachable necessarily. Like, they both are seem like a little bit scary in their interviews sometimes. Yeah. And like that they are like true artisans, where Kiki Palmer just feels so relatable. So I think that even though this movie is sort of like going through some odd twists and turns, as an audience you are like locked in with her and Naomi Ackie as well to a certain degree, because she's another one that you can, I feel like, that people really like.
Yeah.
But Kiki Palmer's charisma is just like off the charts.
Yeah. Yeah. So this movie follows the Velvet Gang, which is the three main women who are stealing from Demi Moore's fashion line, who is just like the zaniest, least subtle sort of pure capitalism. I worked hard for this and I deserve every overpriced penny I get from it, and no one else is doing what I'm doing and I'm so important. And so the fashion world versus this like down and out, like Kiki Palmer's living in an abandoned chicken restaurant.
Yes, which I loved.
And like, and they're, yeah, they're just like, it, on the surface, it's just this sort of heisty style film where they're like, we're going to do a big hit now because it's personal. Like, Kiki is mad at the designer for stealing one of her fashion ideas. She feels like she's not getting ahead. She's not getting the life she wants as a fashionista. And so she's going to go after Demi Moore. And then things get, I mean, things are kooky from the offset, but then things get really woo-woo once there's the introduction of a teleporter / I don't know. There's a lot of monologuing about what this teleporting donut toilet seat can do. And then it's like, they can also, I do not understand the science of it. I could not tell if we were supposed to follow these dialogues or if they were meant to be nonsensical.
Well, it's like the
they can like change the form of things. Yeah, they spray.
It can, like, the teleporter can, one, teleport things.
Yeah.
Two, can sort of like soup up stuff. So if you aim it at something, it can like give you sort of the most version of it.
Right.
But then also you can deconstruct things with it. So pull it apart to its, you know, like resources.
So like an outfit turns into thread and cotton.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Or if you aim at like the maximalist thing, then it just becomes like some giant crazy outfit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you can transport the outfit.
Yeah.
But part of it has to do with the fact that, so Demi Moore plays Christy Smith, this designer, and of Metro Designers, which is kind of like an H&M type shop, but she has said that, you know, like the factories are good or fine or whatever, but actually it's like run by a sweatshop in China.
Yeah.
And so
the sand dusting of jeans is causing severe
illness. Yes. Yes. And the jeans and people are like dying in this factory.
Oh.
So one of the factory workers, do they invent the teleporter?
No, no. They
find it?
It is that they just happen to stumble on this tech because she was looking to save dollars on like cutting out the middleman or something. So it was like, the idea was that, because in China, they could just transport the clothes direct to stores. Or what? The main goal was like, oh yeah, this will be practical.
But the factory workers like get a hold of it.
Yeah.
Yes. And so they send Poppy Lou.
Yeah.
Who from the factory to America. And so she like joins up with the Boosters gang and they have this plan of like, okay, if we can steal enough stuff, then that will like shake up the system and theoretically lead to like better workers.
Right. Because her mom, rights. They're trying to organize a union in China. And yes. they just want 15-minute breaks and like right. a little bit more pay so they don't have to work so hard and die in these factories.
Right, yes.
And so her idea is she'll steal all the clothes and it'll force the, what is it, Christy, to come to the negotiation table.
Right.
But then the boosters are like, the Velvet Gang is like, well, we want to ruin her life and we want to steal her $100,000 suits so that we can boost them and make money
right.
for our future.
Yes. Yeah. And then also, yeah, Kiki wants revenge.
And then Kiki wants revenge.
Yeah, because she stole the design from her. So they're boosting all of this stuff. And then there's like a big fashion show at the end that's Christy Smith's, you know, big moment. Yeah. And they decide we're going to like steal stuff from the fashion show. And then it gets into kind of like a Monsters, Inc. type thing where it's like people are going through the teleporting to China to this. And then we're souping stuff up. We're turning stuff down. It's a big like chase scene with these two teleporters where people are like going different places and changing very stuff and it really like flies off the rails in a very like fun way, but the last like half hour is very chaotic.
Well, because also throughout the movie it's like so random, but Christy's also a super math genius. Like she left MIT as a 15-year-old or whatever to then become a fashion Maeve, but so these $100,000 suits Kiki keeps looking for, she finds all these people who've been posing in the news as like pro-capitalist kind of, oh, I actually don't want my work to be easier because I like, you know, suffering. Or if I, you know, want friends, then I have to buy friends and all these sort of like capitalist, like, I don't know, plants. And they realize that it's all been, you know, an evil plan from Christy to control the masses. And they realize that these are the suits, and they then peel off their flesh and just become, you know, muscly corpses.
The $100,000 suits are actually like skin,
the skin suits.
And underneath it, they look like those people from those bodies.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're like kicking the ball, but it's all just like flesh.
And that is because, that's where I lost the plot a bit. I was like, wait. So these are just her like henchmen in a way, like her, like they're controlling the narrative, so to speak. So they're dressed up in their various costumes to then present as one of the people who are actually like, no, I think this is good and I'm anti-union. But why the skin suits?
I don't know exactly.
Yeah, and then they're like chasing them down because they need to get the skin suits back. So they're like, there's an entire chase sequence with the yucky, you know, body newt, the skin, the anti-skin
people.
Yeah, and they're like firing at the Velvet Gang, and it's a very surreal, very campy, very maximalist, nonsensical. And it's also confusing because they're basically all going in circles. Like there's a police chase, there's Kiki jumping between China and San Francisco and all of this, and then they still just end up back at the fashion show. And I don't know if there's a metaphor in there about how we're just, you know, fighting. We're just all going in circles, doing the same thing, and we really need to stop and really collaborate, because the final sort of victory for them comes not from stealing the clothes or destroying the clothes or embarrassing Christy, but in empowering the people to come together in a, yeah, in a mass protest, basically. They take the magic teleporter toilet seat, spray everybody else so that they're motivated finally to their most extreme version of themselves. They take it to the max, so to speak. Yeah,
they use the like extreme setting of the toilet seat gun thing to like make the protesters more protesty and the union people
everyone
like, more
realizes
striking.
They need to step up.
So it's like everybody is at the most and protesting, which leads to change. But then also there's Lakeith Stanfield, who is a demon.
Is a demon. Yeah, is soul sucking. Demon.
And like, it's
what is that? Is that a message for our draw to nihilism, to thinking, well, I'll be with the demon because no one else understands me? And then she finally empowers herself to be like, no, I don't need your ass eating abilities, you know? I don't know.
Because then there's also a plot line where Don Cheadle is leading a pyramid scheme.
Yes.
That's literally a pyramid scheme where he like passes out pyramids and he's like, okay, put yourself at the bottom. Like if you can fill up with all these
you
things,
want all these friends who to pay $2,000 and then you get $12,000.
Exactly.
Another metaphor for our failed ability to build real friendships. It's all monetary.
I think that having seen, sorry to bother you, I was with this movie. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
I get in general the message and what it's doing and what it's saying. And I enjoy the vibes of the film and the performances. And I think rather than try to get bogged down in the details of like, what is he trying to say through all of these different points? I'm like, okay, you know what? We're just going to sort of like the demon and the time traveling and the skin suits are all sort of whatever, you know, their vibes, their like sprinkles on the top of the cake. The message. I think that he's trying to say just about corporate capitalism in general, which I do agree with. And I like those sections.
Working
and otherwise I'm
resistance.
Like just there for vibes where I think it's sorry to bother you. One, the plot was more confusing, but it was like this
like,
one has extra weird stuff, but the horse people were
he was literally Armie Hammer, cannibal extraordinaire, was trying to find a workforce that didn't need anything, so he was turning his workers into horses, literally horses, right? So then they could work harder and not need as much like.
But then didn't
time
turn
off.
Into a horse at some point?
Well, because I think he accidentally Lakeith Stanfield's character like stabs him with the whatever you call it, potion or whatever.
Anyways,
I love. No, he got caught. Yeah. I love Boosters is more like upbeat. Like Sorry to Bother You has more of like a, like I think it's still optimistic in a way, like it's drawing attention to an issue, but this definitely ends on a higher upbeat note, like a we can do it kind of note.
But Sorry to Bother You is also like a little bit more of like a mystery kind where this isn't
it kind of is,
but
it's
like
fashion forward,
and it's more fun. The fashion in this movie is incredible.
Stunning.
Like the costumes are amazing, not only in the things that like they are wearing, but in all of the clothes that's being sold in the different stores and the production design. Like I really hope that this movie like gets considered when we get to Oscar season, because I feel like the makeup, the costumes, the set design, like all of those are incredible. Also, I love the score. The score is so good in this movie. Like I've been listening to this and The Mandalorian and Grogu, R.I.P. both have incredible scores. Like, that's Ludwig Göransson, who has won 3 Oscars now. Mm-hmm. And did you watch The Mandalorian when it came out, the TV show?
I've seen a little bit.
Because I had forgotten how good, like, the music is in that, especially in the first season. Oh, yeah, I couldn't
tell, yeah.
And then watching the movie, I was like, oh, yeah, the music's great. But then he adds, like, all of these techno scores to it because mm-hmm. they go to this, like, city planet. And I've just been flipping back and forth all week from the I Love Boosters music to the Mandalorian music, like, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh, I'm ready to go, baby. Locked and loaded.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to enjoy this movie more than I maybe did. Like, I felt like there were, like, honestly, the demon thing and the extended eating out scene and I was like, okay. And then the skin suits and the, like, weird car chase up the mall escalators. I was a little bit like, I was not fully on board. I was not fully engaged. It felt a little long for me. But I did enjoy, like, it was like a wobbly get to the finish line, but then it stuck the landing for me. And I think, like, Rob viscerally did not enjoy this film. And maybe that too is motivation for me to like it more. You know, that give and take there.
Uh-huh.
But I also just, I did feel good at the end of this. Like, it's cheesy in a way, but sometimes that's what we need, right? Because so much of our media today, while it is anti-capitalist, you know, from, like, The Menu to Triangle of Sadness, but those always end on, like, a pretty dreary, hopeless kind of note, or it's more about the problem and less about the solution. So I liked that Boots Riley made a really intentional choice to, like, end on this happy, solutions forward point of, like, no, it's through community building, it's through collective action that we'll actually be able to, like, take down this beast of capitalism. And obviously it's a very feminine forward film. Like, every single woman of color is the leader of their different factions, and it's them coming together that, like, really brings the power to the movie. And so that was nice. That definitely, like, helped me get over some of the more kooky bits that I felt like maybe were wearing me down through the middle half of the film. So I liked that. I liked the element of cheese, as it were, this, like, hope, this optimism. I shouldn't say cheese. I need to be less nihilistic and angsty and just accept that this is possible.
You love being nihilistic and angsty. It's your favorite.
I know.
I like that the ending does have a positive ending, but also sort of, like, some action steps. It kind of feels like community building and unions and all of that, like, really full things.
Yeah.
I have been thinking a lot lately about the Industrial Revolution and sort of how eventually that got, I don't want to say fixed, but, like, eventually unions were created, and it did for a while create, like, a really nice, robust middle class, especially growing up in Michigan. You know, lots of people in my parents, maybe not necessarily my parents, but, like, my grandparents' era, like, could graduate high school, get a job working at GM, work at GM their whole life, like, make good money, be able to buy a house, be able to feed their family, be able to go on vacations, like, never in an extravagant way, but in a, like, reliable way where you weren't feeling like you were having to make choices between, like, healthcare and whatever else. And then the advent of computers and a new industry that was largely unregulated provided a great opportunity for horrible, you know, corporate capitalists to sort of, like, try to get as much money as quickly as possible before, you know, laws were put in place to make things equitable for everyone. And I think that the sort of myth of, like, oh, anyone can be a billionaire. Like, everybody, yeah. like you should be working hard. Being a billionaire means that you're a hardworking person. It means you're, like, a good person. Like, being rich is an example of, like, good morals rather than bad morals. I think that that tide is turning. Like, I think that if you were to poll people on the street now about billionaires, there'd be a lot less people who are like, yay, billionaires are cool. And a lot more of like, oh no, billionaires are actually bad people. I mean, even to the point where I think like pop star billionaires, the tide is turning a bit. Like, I feel like I know a lot of Beyonce fans who are a little bit like, like,
yuck. Yeah.
And obviously the same with Taylor Swift. Like, so I think that now that we are, what, you know, 25, 35 years into sort of computers and that type of thing, people are, I think that we're starting to hopefully move in a direction of like, yes, like, let's get some unions in the Amazon factories. Let's get like more unions, which will be able to, while not like fix every problem, like, will make big steps.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up because I just read a book called The Sum of Us by Heather McGee. And she's talking about, like, yeah, this sort of horrific falling apart of the American economy and the loss of the middle class and all of this. And she's a Black woman and she's exploring how racism is obviously a major root for this, but not only in like the systems and the policies of a government, but in the blindness of a white America who will vote against their own self-interest just to keep people of color down, and this like myth of the zero sum loss and all of that. A really good book, really, really, really good book. And it highlights a lot about this, like how unions were this great win, but it's now harder for that because the like language around unions and the language around like workers' rights has become so racialized. And so that's also, I think, why it's important to remember that Black people, people of color, have been the ones organizing for so long. Like, even Memorial Day was brought about by formerly enslaved African Americans organizing to commemorate the fallen Union soldiers and as an opportunity to lay, you know, flowers on their graves. And that's who started Memorial Day. And we don't talk about that and we don't recognize that as easily, but like, that's the point of American history, is Black history, is because of how much organizing Black people have done for this country and how much everyone benefits from that. But now white people are refusing to see that and are suffering because of it. And I think that movies like this are a good reminder that, like, no, like, it's not about like individual needs. It's about like finding the organizations that have been gunning for this, that have been working for this, and joining and uplifting those voices and joining that cause. And so, yeah, I don't think this movie's subtle about it at all, but I think that's sometimes what we need to remind ourselves to deprogram the propagandizing that these skin suits have been doing and feeding us for so long, which is this idea that, oh, well, if you join a union, then there's a chance that so-and-so will get higher than you. And wouldn't that suck for you? Because that's not fair, right? And it's like, there's such a very big monster behind capitalism that's feeding all of this language and us versus them. And actually, it's too far gone and this won't fix anything and all of that. And I like that this movie was very unsubtly pointing out that, yeah, it's not just Christy being a bad bitch. Like, it's also that she's manipulating the public so that she can continue to grow. And she tries to manipulate the people who come after her. It's like, well, you just want to be me. That's all you want. You just want to be me. You're jealous. You're not me. And like Kiki Palmer's character's like final act is like, well, maybe I do, but I'll fight that feeling too. And like, you know, basically middle finger to her at the very end.
There's a really good documentary called Union that is about an Amazon factory or distribution center sort of fight to unionize, which worked sort of in the short term, but then got derailed.
Yeah.
And the way that unions work, I guess, is like you sort of have to start them like in individual factories, and then it sort of grows from there. But it's fascinating to watch all of the different strategies that Amazon uses to try to get to block the union, whether it be like laying people off who they think are susceptible to joining the union, or like, you know, having these various workshops and things about like, you know, to like fairly describe how unions work so that people like know what's going on. But then it's also really interesting, there are like professional union creators whose job it is, like, or whose sort of life calling is to work in these various, like, you know, you get a job in a factory or whatever, and then you help the people who are in the factory be able to make a union, which I thought was also really interesting. The like white American complex of I can't ever make a sacrifice for the greater good of someone else really is wild. It's fascinating because it runs so counterintuitive to the Christian message, which supposedly our country is built on, of like, turn the other cheek, you know, you shouldn't be out for your own personal
and to the least
gain.
Of these.
Yes. Like, you should give your money to widows and orphans, like this kind of thing, where they can, you cannot like ever be inconvenienced by anything. When I was in Sweden last summer, I went on a walking tour, and they were sort of talking about the different way that Swedish people view property, and how they're like, if you own a lot of land in the country, like Swedish people in general have a right to like spend time on your land, like, you know, if it's woods and things, like as long as they're not in like up in your like private sort of like lawn or near your house, like they can walk through it, they can pick berries, they can fish, they can sort of do whatever, as long as they're not, you know, harvesting it in a large way, because that's just how Swedish culture works. And so everyone is used to that, of this like, oh, okay, like, yes, I have my own land, which is like great for me, but then I also have access to everybody else's, and everybody has that access. So it's this communal thing. And I was thinking about how in America, there's no way that that could happen, because Americans are so programmed to be like, I need to have my own things. Like, I don't want to ever be inconvenienced. I don't want to take public transit where, you know, maybe it's delayed, maybe it's not, whatever. Like, I need to have my own car so that I can go exactly when I want and exactly how I want to, and have exactly, you know, the air conditioning and the music and the whatever. Like, there's no inconvenience to be had for the greater good, which I'm sure comes from the fact that for, you know, hundreds of years, we were basically like, didn't have to work because we had slaves and we're stealing land from people and, you know, just got whatever we wanted through sheer brute force. But I do think that it will take a certain rewiring of our like belief systems in order to get a world that's better for everyone. And I do think that to a certain degree, like, social media and the internet and just like access to more information has been helpful in some regards. Like, I think some of these messages that, you know, back in the Industrial Revolution were harder to spread, just because, you know, you had to like either tell someone by word of mouth or be printed in the newspaper, I guess. Like, now those things are all online. If you search them out, it's just like, you know, getting the message to people. So that's the benefit of a Boots Riley movie. You know,
exactly.
You put some big stars in there, and maybe now people are thinking about unions.
Yeah, you could be laughing about driving a car up an escalator, but you're also learning about collective activism.
Yes, which we love.
Yeah. The capitalists work on subliminal messaging, and the revolution has to be more direct. And I appreciate that, and I respect that swing.
Have you seen the movie Is God Is?
Not yet.
It came out like a couple of weeks ago. because Carrie Young, who is one of the skin suit people in this movie, is like a big deal Broadway actress, but she hasn't really done a lot of like film mm-hmm. and TV. So she has a small role in this, but then she's also in this movie, Is God Is, which is sort of like a, I don't know, like a revenge thriller yeah. kind of a vibe. And she's great in that as well. She's really I'm like, okay, good for you, girl. Like, have your moment. She's yeah. also in Proof on Broadway currently with Ayo Edebiri, which and Don Cheadle, which is not necessarily incredible, but you know,
that's something.
But she's good in it. I will say,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I walked away with this movie. Like, it's not necessarily my cup of tea, like, stylistically. Like, this is a little bit more zany than something I usually gravitate towards. But I do feel like it's nice that it exists. And it's like, I might not be the, like, core audience or, like, fully in on it. But I'm, like, watching and enjoying it. And I feel like there's enough at play here that... that I obviously agree with, like, from a socio-political standpoint, that I'm like, yeah, like, I like a movie that's a little weird. I like a movie that you have to, like, sit there and think about and parse out, like, well, what does this mean? What could that be referencing? And why is she being haunted by this giant wrecking ball? And like, there's so much happening that it sort of is, like, was this all played for... like, is this part of the maximalist, like, over the top humor, or is it like a metaphor? Like, what are we doing here? And I love something to chew on like that. So I enjoyed the act of watching this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a hard sell, though, I think, if you're not knowing what to expect. And I think Rob, you know, not to put him on blast, he doesn't like it, and I respect not liking it, but I do feel like, well, you got to respect the art, stupid. You know?
He's just stupid, and he doesn't know what's going on.
No. This isn't everyone's cup of tea is my main point, and that's okay, but it was like, I felt like it was on the line for me, and in the end, I was like, you know what? It was, I liked where it ended up. So
what rating would you give this? Or did you give this on Letterboxd?
I mean, I would probably give it like 3 stars, 3 out of 5. Like, I feel like it's good. Okay. It didn't like change my, it, like, I don't know. It's just like, so.
I gave it 4. I liked it.
Cute.
I liked it more than you, I guess.
I know. And I like Sorry to Bother You more than you did. And I feel like that was probably more like metaphor. Like, it was more like what I remember from Sorry to Bother You, at least. It was like more like gritty, whereas this is more like bubblegummy.
You love when something is like depressing.
A little bit dark, a little bit realistic. Like,
actually, there's no hope at all.
But no, Sorry to Bother You does have, I would say there's optimism there. There's an attention to a call out, a call to action. I love a call to action. So.
Yes.
I think this one, it's like, okay, I was like, oh, cute by the end. Like, they did it. But there was just so much at play that it felt a little bit more like disjointed for me personally.
And this is campier.
Yeah.
It's more my vibe.
Exactly. And I really did love all the like clothes and stuff. It was more the demon and the skin suits and sort of the like, honestly, the demon. Maybe I'm just a prude. Like, maybe that was too much for me, you know?
You don't like watching people get eaten out.
Not like that. It was camera. So horrifying. And yeah. Yeah. Just
bone dry.
Disgusting. All the water
sucked right out of them.
And his smile is so disgusting. And not enough Will Poulter. It's like, give me some more.
Yeah, what? I'm like, what is Will Poulter up to these days?
He was doing The Bear. He was in Death of a Unicorn. Like, he's doing good. He has his, you know, he's like 6'3".
I'm constantly like waiting for him to have his big moment.
I know.
Because he has been good in lots of stuff. Like, yeah. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. Like, the young. First thing I knew him from is We're the Millers. He's not that young.
No, I know, but he's young.
Okay. I would have said he was 40, so.
40? No.
Well, just because I'm like, We're the Millers was, in my mind, he was like 25 in We're the Millers, and that was like over 10 years ago. But
wasn't he like playing a teenager?
Yes, but I'm like, everybody playing a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. No, 25. I know, but. Yeah. No, I've been a stan, you know, since Maze Runner, I guess. And he's had such a glow up. It's honestly like shocking. Like,
I know. He is like, he just like keeps getting hotter.
I know.
Yeah, he was in the Maze Runner movies. He was in Midsommar where he died.
He was?
Yes. He's like the douchey guy who like pees on the sacred log or whatever. Remember that?
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
No, I really have been. Warfare, his biggest fan.
Your favorite movie that I didn't like.
I did not see Warfare.
You were wasn't weren't you obsessed with Warfare?
Are you joking? What this is the one. This is. I liked his other movie.
I'm getting this mixed up with something else. There was some movie recently that you really liked that I was like, no, I'm not like, and I didn't even see it. And Civil in my mind, War. It was Warfare. Oh, Civil War. Maybe that's what I'm getting mixed up with.
Yeah. That's no. Also, Warfare, that's I do not enjoy. Okay. I did not okay. go I didn't see it. I don't like a military propaganda, even if it's saying it's just showing the darkness of war. No.
He
thank
was in
you.
The TV show Dope Sick, which I didn't yes. watch. You watched that, though, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Really
and
good.
Then the bear.
And in the bear, he's so hot. He has a British accent and he makes pastries. Oh my God. Everyone's like shipping Io and Jeremy isn't, Allen.
He is British, isn't he? Yes. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Well, he's finally let free to be his hot British self. Is he really? Because he's always been American in all these things.
Wait a second. Wait a second. I did not know this. He was Eustace in Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Did you know that?
Voyage of the Dawn Treader, as in like
the Chronicles
the third
of Narnia
Chronicles.
Movie.
I don't yes. think I even saw that.
He's like the main. He's like one of the main. He's like the main little kid in Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I did not. Know
I did
that.
Not see that. That okay. was like the bad one, right? With only
well,
the two
yeah,
kids.
I mean, yes. Yeah. Yes. But that's sort of how it works, in the, or that's like
right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In the books, that's how it is.
How? Yeah, no, he's. I mean, not to derail wait, this crazy. Movie led by women of color, but I do enjoy Will Poulter. I'm excited to see whatever he does.
Wait, one more side tangent before we end the going down the Chronicles of Narnia rabbit hole.
Oh, okay.
The, Greta Gerwig's Magician's Nephew
yeah.
is has having a full theatrical release next year uh-huh. where like not that Netflix is like buying out theaters like they have been, but like it's actually going to theaters, like the numbers will be reported, like it will make money normally. It will just be a Netflix movie. This is the first time that Netflix has ever done this.
Isn't that like the Rian Johnson Knives Out?
No. So the way that Knives Out worked and the way that like the Stranger Things TV show works is that Netflix will buy out the theater from the like from the theatrical place, and then they don't have to report any of the numbers for that. And it's not and so then they can have it in theaters for as long or as short as they want to.
Hmm.
So basically like Amazon says to IFC, hey, like, or no, Netflix says to IFC, like, hey, like, we want to show our movie with you. Like, we will pay you X amount of money to show it in these theaters. You can sell tickets for whatever you want. Whatever money you make from the tickets is yours. But we, like, aren't, like we won't be reporting grosses in the same way.
Okay.
Wait, anyways.
But, okay, so Magician's Nephew is a movie, though, right?
Right, so Magician's Nephew is a movie, but I'm kind of like, it's interesting to me that this, that they're doing this mm-hmm. after all of these years that they haven't, and after all of these big directors have presumably, like, tried to get this, and now it's Greta Gerwig, who's the first person who's been able to, you know, make this push. I mean, like, Barbie was huge, so obviously there's that.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting that it's on this Chronicles of Narnia movie that's based off of the Chronicles of Narnia book that's probably like the most convoluted and that nobody really likes. So I'm interested to see like if this movie's good or not.
I mean, it's Greta Gerwig.
Well, right.
So she's I think it'll be good.
I'm excited.
But what about like the, I feel like weren't there numbers for the black and white movie, the
for Roma?
Yeah.
I mean, so people like get like people have done estimates based on like how many seats are sold, like when you look at tickets online and that kind of a thing. So people can have like a general estimate for how much money an Amazon or I don't know why I keep saying Amazon, why how much money a Netflix movie makes, but it's not reported in the same way that normally Netflix or that normal movies are. And normal movies that come through the studios have a certain distribution window and deal with the major theater chains where it's like, currently, I believe it's like 45 days. So the movie will show for 45 days in theaters before it goes to VOD. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, AMC or whoever, like if they have these deals. When Netflix puts movies into theaters like they did with the Knives Out movie or the Stranger Things thing, they have to negotiate that separately with the movie theater, which is why with the Stranger Things situation, it was that weird model where like you paid $30 but it was like but then it came back, it was like buying a gift card, so it was like a concessions $30, so technically the movie was free even though you had to pay to see it because Netflix had spent had paid AMC to put it in the theaters, and but then they couldn't sell. So yeah, it's all this like weird cockamamie logistical things where with Greta Gerwig that will actually just be making money the normal way.
Okay, well, how much money did I Love Boosters make?
Not that much. I was looking, and it came in eighth at the box office, earning under $5 million. This is domestic, so it might have earned more overseas. Well, but, for example, it came in below Mortal Kombat 2 on its third week out. So.
Yeah, but for independent, it's not that bad.
It's weird, though, because it's like, in my mind, there's been so much marketing for this. Maybe it's just because I live in New York City. But I feel like I have seen so much stuff about this. Like, I have not seen anything about Mortal Kombat 2. Like, I couldn't tell you who's in that movie.
Different audiences, for sure.
But also, this movie Passenger, which is a horror movie, made double the money that I Love Boosters made. And I haven't heard anything about that, either.
That's true. Again, I think there's the world of people who just see I don't know how to, in my mind I'm like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, that's them and this is them, you know, it's like so separate. I don't count. It's like people who read Colleen Hoover, like it's like it doesn't really count as like what's a good book in my mind, you know.
Right, well, I'm not saying that it has anything to do with like quality, because we know that is not equatable, but it is always shocking to me when there are these movies that I feel like I've heard about them constantly. Like, they're just, like, such in my orbit that make no money. And then there's these movies that I have never heard of that are making more money than that. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's the, like, Christian movies, because those make a lot of money. It's like, okay, those aren't being marketed to me. But, But it is weird that, like, yeah, like Sheep Detectives has made made $12 million in theaters this week, a random movie about sheep on its third week, and I Love Boosters, which has a lot of big name stars and like a good trailer and has done a lot of press, is only making $4 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's like how to blow up a pipeline, you know. The powers that be don't want this movie getting out. The powers that be don't want a large audience. Okay. Yeah, so I guess go see this, but just be aware there will be a scene of a demon sucking someone's soul out of their
vagina.
Always
a good time at the cinema. Okay, well, that is it for this week. Next week, we'll be back to discuss the series finale of Hacks. So actually, we're just going to talk about Hacks in general, the whole show. But mostly this season and also the finale. Praying that it lands the plane well. This season has been great so far, so I'm really optimistic about the finale. Fingers crossed. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy your micro-looting. We will see you next week. Bye.